Hard to believe, but the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast is on the air again. The Medicare podcast whose leaky batteries ruined all of its childhood toys. He wonders what Punch Drunk really feels like. It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Yes, yes, it is. It is Doug Jones, your Medicare expert, as my nephew Drew McMillan just told you. He's my Canadian nephew. I have other I don't have other nephews. I think Drew and his brother Robbie are my only nephews, now that I think about the Jones family tree. And they're in Canada. They're a bunch of foreigners, but they're great, great foreigners to have in your family. So anyway, thank you for joining us. It's episode 350. Geez, it took us 2.5 years to get here, but we made it. We've cheated death along the way, and sneered at the COVID monster, and frankly, we've come out, I think, stronger and better than we might have. So it is a beautiful day in Arizona. It's a beautiful day to be recording episode number 350. I couldn't be happier about it. And just because I like to hear it, I'm going to ask Randy right here to play our 30-second radio spot. I'm going to shut up now.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I hope the audience did. That's just a little succinct reminder of how you can tap into the knowledge that we're trying to impart here, the knowledge and the confidence that Medicare is not going to be a horribly complicated, difficult thing for you to deal with. In fact, given the correct advice that I can provide for you, free of charge, of course, it's going to be a fairly rewarding transition in your life, going from probably a big deductible, probably an expensive Obamacare type of health insurance plan to a Medicare plan that's going to have a much more reasonable cost, much more reasonable and protective coverage that will protect you from outrageous medical bills. And I believe that you're going to find that it's an entirely satisfactory arrangement. Once again, if you get the proper advice from somebody like me as to what sort of supplementary products to purchase for yourself. And they're not costly because the government is paying most of the freight. So for once, the government is doing something constructive for those of us that are aging into Medicare. And when I say us, I'm really not including me because I did it a long time ago. But guess who else we have with us today? We have Randy Carson, who is also celebrating episode 350. How are you, Randy? Is this an exciting day for you?
I'm fine. It's an exciting day. I love the number 350. Mm. There's a number of things in my life that revolve around the number 350, most of them having to do with V8 engines.
Well, there you go. And horsepower, 350 horsepower, 1 horsepower per inch was a big deal back in the day.
Yeah. Now, so you've got, obviously, the people on the podcast know that Doug's a classic car collector, but do you have any with 350s in them?
Absolutely. For instance, the Corvette. The 65 Corvette has a 350 crate motor because I blew up the 350. I ran for years and years. I drove that thing all over the country. And when I was headed back to Illinois a couple of years ago, driving through Oklahoma, it started acting a little funny. And I said to myself, it'll probably make it to Illinois. No problem. And when I got to Joplin, Missouri, it just gave up the ghost. And so I let it cool off. I was sitting there on the exit ramp of Route 66, Interstate 44, and I let it cool off for about 20 minutes, and I managed to get it started and limped it to the hotel parking lot, and I had to get a flatbed to come and get it. A friend of mine in Arizona did some research and found a highly, highly skilled garage that specializes in classic cars. They do a lot of restorations, but this thing was back in the woods, and it was owned by a couple of Missouri hillbillies, and they had a couple of guys working there that looked like they were, you know, more comfortable working under a shade tree in the backyard. But this thing, you'd never find it unless somebody gave you specific directions. So I just followed the tow truck driver, and they took that car apart during the course of a day to diagnose it and said, "Oop, it's dead." it's seen better days. So I wound up having it shipped up to Illinois and had to get a new crate motor for it. Now it runs like a champ. And what else have I got? The 57 Nomad. I put a 427 in that. And then I had to leave to come to Arizona because we were homeless vagabonds in Illinois after selling our house. And so I gave the car to a restoration shop, and they were all excited. It's a father and son deal. And they said, "We would love to have your car. It's a beautiful car. We'll just assemble it for you so that when you come back to Illinois, you can just hop in it and drive around, and it'll be a lot of fun." And I said, "Okay, that's great." Well, of course, in about a week, I got a phone call saying, "We cannot make the steering work with the 427. The oil pan is interfering with the steering." And so there are ways to solve the problem. Every one of them costs a ton of money. And I said, "Well, let's take the one that has the lightest ton of money involved." So we wound up. Go ahead.
I was going to say, go for the quarter ton version.
Yeah. Well, I do want a little performance. And so what we got was a 350 that's bored and stroked. And so it's actually a 383 stroker is how Chevy people refer to this particular engine. Cool. So it's a small block, so it's going to fit in the car very easily. I'll be able to reassemble the factory air conditioning that came with the car in 1957, but it also will have a ton of torque because that's what happens when you bore and stroke a 350. You get a 383 stroker torque monster, they tell me.
You and I have discussed this several times. I'm just going to put in my vote one more time, just to keep it uppermost in your mind.
Oh, God, does this involve cutting a hole in the hood?
I was going to say, is this one you could put a blower on?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, this would be a lot better application for the blower because, I would say, heck yes, I'd like to put a blower on it. Right now, I'm kind of operating from long distance. And so when I tell these guys, "Hey, let's get this particular engine," it has a carburetor on it. And I said, "Hey, if you can sell the carburetor back to them, because we're going to get at a minimum EFI," but it didn't occur to me to put a blower on it.
There you go. Tell them to send the EFI back. We're going for a blower.
And that's kind of gives me the warm fuzzies because when my daughter was a little girl, she and I did a model of a 57 Chevy. And in the model, you could do it two ways. You could do it factory stock, which sucks. Big one. And or you could make it a gasser and you could leave the front bumper off, which is my old 57. I had no front bumper on this one. So far, I don't have a front bumper on. And so then you can also put a blower on it, and they gave you a hood with a hole in it. And it was a fun little father daughter project.
I need to recommend heavily that you give that some serious consideration.
I'm with you there. And the Corvette, which you've recommended several times, is still blowerless because I don't think Mary would allow me to make a big hole in the hood. On the other hand,
I know you've told me that, but you've got side pipes on your vet, right?
Absolutely.
All right. So I'm for right now, I'm happy that we've got side pipes, but you know, and if we can get a blower on your Nomad, okay, we're getting closer.
Yeah, I like the idea. I'm glad you brought it up because I hadn't thought about it. And so that's going to be on my list of important things to do. However, I got to tell you, it's almost frightening for a guy my age to see how many parts there are to a 1957 automobile. Just reassembling the whole thing, the interior and everything, is going to be a very time-consuming project.
Oh, I can imagine. I was going to say, you were talking about the mechanics down in Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those were the guys that could fit a blower on that thing and get a 427 in there and everything else. You might not want to take a look at the underneath part. But
Well, do you ever watch a show called Roadkill?
No.
There's, Okay. I highly recommend that you watch one or two episodes of Roadkill and or Roadkill Garage. They're both produced by the same outfit, which is Hot Rod Magazine. David Freiberger is involved in both shows. And what they do, he's got a couple of buddies, and what they do is they get something that is only possible to describe as junk, and they'll go burn the rubber off of it, or they'll drive it around in mud. They got a lowrider that has a massive hydraulic system, and they were going to drive in the dirt across the desert from Los Angeles to Las Vegas on three wheels. Because when these Mexicans do their low rider hydraulic things, the car will stand up on three wheels. And they decided to drive across. Now, they only made it a couple of miles in that configuration before something gave out, something broke in. But Roadkill. Write that down and watch that show. I think
Roadkill Garage.
Roadkill and Roadkill Garage. Roadkill is the mothership of the series. And then they started a Roadkill Garage where they spend more time on the mechanical salvation. But they'll go find a car that's been sitting out in a cornfield for 10 years, and they'll do the minimum necessary to get that thing started and running. And then they'll take it out and just blow rubber and mud and dirt and stuff. And it's just, it looks like a lot of fun. If I didn't love my cars so much, I would be doing that sort of thing. But it's fun to watch other people wreck their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, I am in a great mood now because we have gotten to talk about stuff that I love. So now we get to talk about business.
Well, as you can see from the checklist that I sent you, we're going to be talking about an article here that got me all excited. I hope it's as good as it sounds like it's going to be. As you know, I don't do a lot of preparation here. It's not like we script what we're going to say or anything like that. It's all seat of the pants around the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And so the article I'm going to read today, here are three Medicare surprises that can cost you thousands every year. And I just thought it was interesting that it starts out, here are three Medicare surprises, instead of saying, I don't know, it just sounded more friendly, and boy, you're going to like this. And so I'm hoping the audience likes it as much as I hope I'm going to like it. But so here we go. And it says, for some Medicare beneficiaries, I don't really like this. So for some Medicare participants, health insurance coverage ends up costing more than it does for most of their peers. And it's not by choice. While there are costs that individuals are often aware of, i.e., they purchase a supplemental policy, or they choose a more expensive plan, some premium-related expenses sneak up on enrollees, and depending on the person, they could add up to thousands of dollars extra per year. Roughly 62.6 million people, the majority of whom are age 65 or older, are enrolled in Medicare. Most pay no premium for Part A, which is hospital coverage, hospital, nursing home, that sort of thing, because they have at least a 10-year work history of paying into the system through payroll taxes. When it comes to Part B for outpatient care and Part D for prescription drug coverage, however, you may encounter some surprise premium costs, and that can happen whether you stick with original Medicare Parts A and B or choose to get your benefits through a Medicare Advantage plan, which is Part C. Here's what to know. Number one in this article, number one, higher premiums for higher income. About 7% or 4.3 million people of the Medicare enrollees pay more than the standard premiums for Parts B and D due to the so-called income-related monthly adjustment amount, or IRMA, according to the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Now, you might remember that that's the government agency that is too slow to figure out how to properly spell their acronym. It's Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. It's CMMS, but they misspell it CMS. So anytime you hear the word CMS, you know you're dealing with people that are challenged. So those amounts kick in at modified adjusted gross income of more than $88,000. and they increase at higher income thresholds. For instance, a single taxpayer with income between $88,000 and $111,000 would pay an extra $59.40 per month for Part B on top of the standard premium of $170.10. So we're using last year's numbers here, and so I'm not going to give you the totals, but basically they're saying your premium would be $59.40 in addition to what the normal monthly Part B premium would be. And the IRMAs don't gently phase in with each income bracket. Earn $1 above the income threshold, and the surcharge applies in full force. Many beneficiaries don't even know that Medicare costs anything at all. So that's a woman who's written a book that competes with my book. I didn't even mention Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever, available at Amazon.com, available at BarnesandNoble.com. And this is, they're quoting a woman here who wrote a competing book that is also on Amazon. She does something weird. She's got like 5,000 reviews, and I'm thinking that she's doing something that flouts the rules, like providing an incentive for people to review her book. Mine, I completely bring my book up to date every year. And so Amazon says, well, you got a new book, you got to start with zero reviews. So my number of reviews is never going to be as big as hers. So I'm not even going to mention her book. Nyeh. So anyway, it adds insult to injury when they find out that not only do they have to pay for Medicare Parts B and D, but also that they have to pay more than other people. I call it the success penalty. That's Doug talking there. Generally speaking, the extra amounts are determined by your tax return from 2 years earlier. And let's see, many of my clients have been able to get their IRMA lowered due to a change in income. You can ask the Social Security Administration to reconsider the surcharges if your income has dropped since you filed that tax return. You have to fill out a form. And of course, I can provide you with that form if you're listening to this and you think you want to do that. I'll be happy to help you. So you have to fill out a form and provide supporting documents. While it depends on your situation, suitable proof may include a more recent tax return, a letter from your former employer stating you retired, more recent pay stubs, or something similar showing that your income has dropped. The required form includes a list of life-changing events that qualify as reasons for reducing or eliminating the IRMAs, that's the income-related monthly adjustment amount, or the success penalty. Now, these things could include marriage, death of a spouse, divorce, loss of a pension, or the fact that you stopped working or reduced your hours. Many of my clients have been able to get their IRMA lowered due to a change in income because they retired and no longer are getting a paycheck, says Elizabeth Gavino. She's an independent broker and a general agent for Medicare plans. She's not a general agent, probably. She's just an independent broker. So she goes on to say, or the article goes on to say, if your request doesn't work, you can appeal the decision to administrative law judges. Although the process could take time and you would continue paying the surcharges in the meantime. So here's number two, spousal income counts against you. Those IRMAs aren't just based on your own income. For example, if you have retired, but your spouse is still working, and your joint tax return shows modified adjusted gross income of $176,000 or higher, you would be subject to IRMAs. This is why it's so important for people to begin educating themselves about Medicare a few years before they become eligible at age 55 or 65. Think about it. If you knew this at age 60, you might be able to consult with your financial advisor, do some planning to try to keep your modified adjusted gross household income below those thresholds. So here's number three, third point in this article. Sign up late, pay a penalty. Boy, I harp on this all the time to my clients. Generally speaking, you're supposed to sign up for Medicare during a seven-month window that starts 3 months before your 65th birthday and 65th birth month and ends 3 months after it. However, if you meet an exception, i.e., you or your spouse have a qualifying group insurance at a company with 20 or more employees, you can put off enrolling. Workers at those larger employers often sign up for Part A and delay Part B until they lose their other coverage. Then they generally get 8 months to enroll. The rules are different, though, for companies with fewer than 20 employees. Those workers are supposed to sign up when first eligible. Stop taking advice from friends and speak with the carriers or the HR department to get confirmation on Part B requirements, this woman advised. For each full year that you could have been enrolled in Part B but were not, you could face a 10% penalty. That's 10% of the monthly Part B standard premium, which is $170 this year, or the 10% is $17. That means if you go for a year without enrolling when you should have enrolled, then they can impose a lifetime late enrollment penalty that's 10% for every year that you were late. So that's $17 a month that will go on for the rest of your life. If you were only late 1 year, if you were late for 2 years, then that would be $34 a month additional that you would have to pay for the rest of your life. This amount is tacked onto your monthly premium, generally for as long as you're enrolled in Medicare, which is going to be the rest of your life, as I might have just said. For Part D, as in dog, prescription drug coverage, the late enrollment penalty is 1% of the monthly national base premium. That changes every year. Basically, it's 1% of $33 as of this article. So you're looking at 33 cents. That's for each full month that you were late, that you should have had coverage but didn't. Like the Part B penalty, this amount also generally lasts as long as you have drug coverage. The Part D penalty is the one that we see hit people most often. Although Part D is voluntary, if you don't enroll when you're first eligible and you don't have other creditable coverage, you'll begin accumulating a penalty that grows larger with time. So those are three elements of the Medicare program that could catch you by surprise and cost you a bunch of money. Wow, I almost hit the bullseye time-wise, Randy. I'm pretty proud of myself.
You did. You know, we've been talking about, you know, the Part B penalties and all that stuff.
Yes, we have. And,
you know, up until today, for some reason, it all of a sudden dawned on me that could be a chunk of change over the course of a lifetime.
If you dilly-dally and don't attend to business, then it will add up to a chunk of change. Yes, no question about it. Fortunately, most people are responsible enough to say, hey, I'm leaving my job. I'm leaving my health insurance. Medicare isn't good enough, so Medicare Part A isn't going to be complete coverage, so I'd better do something about it. Even if they don't know what to do, they know that they should call somebody and ask for advice. And one good place is, as this article said, is your HR department. If you're in a fairly large company, you've got HR people that are pretty professional. They should be able to advise you as to what to do.
Yeah, I don't know why it all of a sudden stuck in my head today, but I mean, wow. I'm sitting here adding, you know, I was adding on my fingers and toes and everything. I go, wow, that could be quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. That 33 cents on the Part D, the drug plan late enrollment fee, that 33 cents is 33 cents a month times however many months you neglected to enroll. And there are a lot of people who say, you know something, I really don't need a drug plan. Why don't I just sign up for it down the road if my doctor makes me take some prescription? Then I'll get a plan. But the problem is that's when the late enrollment fee comes in, or the penalty. So you've got to get a plan when you're first eligible in order to avoid the penalty.
That's great advice. That is absolute. You know, I can't help it. Every time we do one of these things, I learn something. I think I've heard just about everything, and then you come up with something else and go, wow, I never thought of it that way.
Yeah, it's more fun talking about cars, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. But you didn't mention Part C today.
No, for crapola. Did not mention that.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know what that is? Crap. And that stands for Medicare Advantage Plan.
Yes, or disadvantage, as Randy likes to call them. There is no late enrollment fee for those things. They take on all comers.
If they charged a late enrollment fee, they wouldn't ever get anybody after they thought about it.
Right. But that's a whole nother story for a whole nother day.
It is. Well, we need to probably, bring her into the dock. As you can see, I'm still, wandering around out in the Pacific.
I'm getting a little queasy, a little seasick as I look out the porthole.
I'm gonna have to bring it in one of these days. But we need to thank everybody for joining us. As always, we thoroughly enjoy every minute that we spend with you, and we look forward to the next time. But in the meantime, we have not talked about a couple things that I'm responsible for mentioning on each podcast. One is send mail to Doug at dbj@mlmmailbag.com. He gets disappointed. He gets depressed. He's down in the mouth when he doesn't get any. So help me out here. Help me out. And you can go to amazon.com and get your latest and greatest and smell. You know, they all smell like, you know, when they come out, they're all new smelling, new smelling new books.
New book smell.
So get your Medicare for the Lazy Man, easiest and simplest guide ever. 2022.
Yes.
Which is the green one. Or you can get an audio, or mm-hmm. you can get a Kindle.
Yeah.
You can get just about anything you want. It's virtually a 7-Eleven of Medicare information written by an expert, Doug Jones.
If we can figure out another way to deliver the information, we would do that too, and there'd be five methods.
Well, then we could look in. I've actually thought about it. You've heard about a Vulcan mind meld.
Yes. Yes. I've seen it in action.
Yes. We may want to consider about that someday.
But that's hitting people one at a time. That sounds very time consuming. I'd like to find a way to do that in a group.
Oh, that would be better.
The other thing that is interesting that I mentioned the other day, and Mary jumped on this and said, genius. She hasn't said that to me in years. She said, this is an excellent idea. It's genius of you to think of it. I said, what about a Medicare coloring book? And she said, you got to start working on that right away. And then I took a nap, but it's in the works. So I guess, I mean, I'll be thinking about it for a long time. A Medicare coloring book.
Now, given the fact that we've discussed crayons at length, are you going to go with the 24 box, the 8 box, the 64 box, or the stadium version of the 128, or what is it, 148, 100? I forget what the stadium box, 164, I think. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to leave that to you because you know how you drag your ladder out every year to take a photograph of the new edition? Well, I think you ought to do the same thing for the coloring book, and I'll let you decide how big a box of crayons that should be used.
Some year I'm going to call you up and I'm going to send you a picture. I'm all wet.
Uh-huh.
That will have been because I fell off the ladder into the pool.
You know, there are worse things that have happened in Arizona.
I know. I totally understand. Well, thank you all for joining us. We certainly appreciate it. And I'm going to bring her into the dock now. But in the meantime, you have just spent about 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy, originally from Oklahoma, now residing in Cave Creek, Arizona, in his fortress of solitude. I think it's up somewhere above 12,000 feet.
We're above the tree line. There are no trees out here, just saguaro cactuses.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Gorgeous place. Gorgeous place. So anyway, thanks, everybody. And I'm going to turn it back over to Doug for one more or two more or three more comments.
I'm going to say bye-bye.